So if you're in this room, you're here to listen to Hardik Dalal and Joshua Aylward on disaggregating aggregators. Hardik and Joshua both are senior managers at EY, Actuarial Services. They've both got 8 to 10 years experience in the area, over Australia, New Zealand, Asia Pacific, and even in the UK, so quite a broad range there. Hardik has assisted UK price comparison website with its go-to-market strategy, so particularly well qualified to speak on the subject. And Joshua previously worked in the personal insurance pricing division of a large Australian insurer. I'm not sure why you're so coy there. You work for Suncorp.
I was giving you material.
All right, so with disaggregating aggregators, please welcome Josh and Hardik.
Great, thanks Ash. I guess the first question to ask is why are we actually presenting on aggregators? So I guess recently aggregators have been raising their profile, trying to enter different markets, and there's also been an intensification of competition between aggregators observable in the market. In the local market, aggregators appear to have been successful, I guess, in health insurance and also in international markets, have been successful across a range of different insurance products. In more recent times in the local market, there's been a more specific play for personal lines and motor insurance in particular by aggregators, and that's what we're going to focus on in our presentation. To our knowledge, aggregators have also not been previously presented on to the industry in any detail, and we thought there was a little bit of a gap that we could help to fill. Even though this topic was conceived prior to the financial system inquiry, the interim report suggestion of mandating a relationship between insurers and aggregators has certainly further raised the profile of aggregators, as has the directive to establish an aggregator for North Queensland in an attempt to overcome the market challenges there. So our agenda for the day is firstly to give a brief overview of the current role that aggregators in Australia are playing, as well as in selected international markets. We'll also touch on the financial system inquiry and what we can learn from the submissions and the interim report that has been received to date. The research that we conducted into aggregators was mainly desktop research, as well as discussions that we had with our global colleagues. After undertaking research, we identified several preconditions for aggregators to flourish in particular markets. And we've come up with these hypotheses that might contribute to the success or failure of aggregators within markets. The question that we're hoping to answer at the outset was really, is this the last time that we're going to have to consider or talk about aggregators when discussing the Australian general insurance industry? So first of all, aggregators in the market. So in Australia, aggregators are reasonably well established in the health insurance, life insurance and travel insurance industries. iSelect is the biggest, the highest profile and seemingly the most successful aggregator in the market. It's been reported that iSelect sold 20% of health insurance premiums in 2012 and currently sell, it is estimated, between 40 and 50% of new business in the health insurance industry. It has a broad range of product comparison, including utilities, and also previously made a concerted push into motor insurance. However, that appears to have had limited effect. Compare the Market is a more recent entrant and has actively sought to raise its profile. It is more focused predominantly on motor insurance than other aggregators. However, it does have a broader range of products. To date, the impact on the market appears to be limited. Choosy is similar in scope to Compare the Market, but does not appear to have built the same profile as Compare the Market at this stage. Overall, there is a consistent offering between these aggregators, essentially advertising to find the best value insurance quickly and efficiently. Another notable feature is that no major insurance brands have engaged with aggregators to this point. Generally, the channel appears to be used by challenger brands as an additional distribution channel to gain scale and market share.
So it was the success really of the aggregators in the UK market that certainly triggered our interest in the topic. We've got there listed the main aggregators in the UK, which many of you may have come across or heard of from colleagues. So you've got Compare, you got Money Supermarket, you got Confused, and you got Go Compare. Aggregators, based on our research and our discussions with our international colleagues, have really changed the industry model in the UK, particularly for home and motor, and particularly for motor, and they've become a major part of the industry there. The main reasons that consumers tend to shop around for the insurance products is due to the high level of price elasticity, and also that there's not much brand loyalty, as what we've found in terms of talking with our UK colleagues. And we'll go through some of the churn rates later on in one of the sessions. I guess the market presence and market dominance of the aggregators is really demonstrated by the fact that in terms of motor sales, aggregators account for up to 70% of all new sales in the UK market. It's a bit less for home and motor, around 40 to 50%, but still a very significant proportion. However, we should point out, and we do discuss a bit later, that in recent years, there has been a bit of extra scrutiny on the aggregators in the UK market, particularly the FSA and various other regulatory bodies have started to pay a bit more attention to the advice they're offering and the role they're playing, and they're starting to effectively make them a bit more accountable to the products that they're offering to their customers.
As part of our research, we also touched on the German and the Swiss markets. There is just one major aggregator in each of those markets. To date, the take-up rate for insurance, either across health, life insurance, or personal lines insurance, has been very low. Is generally seen as being due to cultural reasons in those markets, with insurance products predominantly being purchased through insurer-tied agents or broker models.
And we do point out that with both Check24 and Comparis, they've both branched out into other income streams. So and this is common that we see across a lot of these aggregator websites, that they've had to branch out from just providing insurance products to other types of products in order to survive. And the real example of this was in Germany, where two insurer-backed aggregator websites did open around the mid to late noughties, but they didn't really survive because they were trying to sell just insurance, whereas Check24 has survived and because it does offer other products. And that really is common with the aggregators in Australia as well, as Josh alluded to earlier, where most of those do offer comparisons for products such as electricity or internet or travel options. So our next topic is a very brief summary of how aggregators were dealt with in the interim report from the Financial Systems Inquiry. So the main issues identified by the report was that access to insurer data by aggregators was lacking, and that motor and home insurers have been reluctant to participate in aggregators. So not really the most surprising findings. And the main recommendations that they've made was that, one is that ensure that aggregators are able to use the automated process to seek quotes from the insurers. And I guess something more interestingly is to provide the ability to compare the categories of insurance products in order for customers to be able to compare the value of the product. So, and that's one of the comments that has been raised by insurers quite a bit in their responses to the inquiry, that their concern is that aggregators will just become price comparators for customers, and therefore customers may not be able to make the best decision by looking at the actual the details of the product. So here we've summarised the responses from the major insurers as part of the second round submission following the interim report from the Financial Systems Inquiry. In summary, what they've expressed is that the market should be allowed to determine the role of aggregators rather than it being mandated. And secondly, that selling products through aggregators may represent a lower level of service to customers or a lower level of advice to customers who are not able to understand the true features of the product. An interesting side note is that similar to the Australian general insurance industry, in the Australian health insurance industry, the two biggest players, Bupa and Medibank Private, also don't participate on the comparison websites such as iSelect. However, their market share is starting to fall now. And so it's interesting to see where that goes as to whether that provides a lead as to where the general insurance market may flow. But we discuss that a bit more when we look at the preconditions for a aggregator market to flourish.
Okay. There was a limited uptake by aggregators themselves in response to the FSI. So Compare the Market was the only aggregator, and they made a submission in the first round. However, were silent in the second round of submissions. So understandably, the tone of the submission was around the desire to provide consumers with transparent comparisons and also to try and foster competition within the market. There was also reference to a disparity between what's being seen in the health and the travel insurance sectors in particular, and what's being observed within the personal lines markets, where there's still resistance to engagement with the aggregators. There have also been a number of other stakeholders that have made responses in the second round. So APRA and the ICA have a fairly similar viewpoint to the major insurers that Hardik just described, while Choice and ASIC believe that aggregators can bring better price competition and also allow consumers to make more informed decisions. The dichotomy of the government regulators is interesting to observe, but ultimately it's a function of their primary objectives regarding their prudential safety versus focusing on fairness and transparency in financial markets. So just quickly, APRA comments described compelling insurers to provide their products through the aggregator websites as potentially problematic, essentially because there's no barriers to entry, and if there was mandated interaction, then there'd have to be particular arrangements agreed with each of those with each of the aggregators.
Which is a very interesting comment given the North Queensland development.
Correct. Also, the ASIC comments. Consumers are increasingly seeking information and making purchases online, so there appears to be a natural pull towards that sales distribution. And also, ultimately, there's the potential for customers to benefit. There seems to be a bit of a standoff, I guess, between the insurers regarding the suitability for aggregators in terms of making the best decision for their circumstances versus the stakeholders that are really in the transparency in the market.
We should stop pressing it twice. So having assessed the current state of the market and having talked to our international colleagues, what we've pulled together is what we believe are the five key preconditions necessary for aggregators to flourish in a market, be it personal lines, general insurance market, or health insurance, or any other type of market where they choose to participate. And what these characteristics are one, the trustworthiness of the aggregators, which impacts on how customers perceive them. Secondly, one condition required is obviously the fact that people want to make purchases online and use that channel. Thirdly is the commoditization of the insurance product. Fourthly is what the brand loyalty is to the existing major insurers in the market space. And finally, do the aggregators actually make a positive contribution to the market, both in terms of for consumers as well as for the established insurers? So to the first topic, we looked at trustworthiness of aggregators, and we've looked at this for the Australian market and for the UK. And initially, we assessed trustworthiness on the basis of independence and transparency. So in relation to these, for Australia, what we found was that in terms of independence, out of the major aggregators that we talked about earlier, it's really only Canstar, which is the does not have any direct relationship with insurers. For example, Compare the Market is owned by Budget Holdings, who also own the insurance underwriting agent Auto in General. Real insurance, and various other insurance products sold on Compare the Market are actually underwritten by Hollard, and all the remaining car insurance products are underwritten by Auto in General. So there's really only two underwriters on the Compare the Market website that are providing a product. With Choosy, Choosy is owned by Hollard as well, which is the distributor of most of the insurance products on their website. In terms of transparency, the sites seem to fare a bit better in that most of them are transparent about their processes for earning fees and their connections to insurers. So at the bottom of their websites, most of them list who the actual underwriter is, but it is in the fine print. For the UK, the FSA has raised concerns both about independence and transparency. And what they've identified is that it's not always clear from aggregators as to who they're owned by and whether they're owned by insurers or brokers. And in terms of transparency, there have recently been concerns raised about the transparency of the products and services, as well as how customers' personal data is used by some of these aggregators in their other dealings. So whilst we looked at independence and transparency, I guess our belief was that they would be the two key drivers of whether aggregators would flourish in that sense. What really defines the success of the aggregators is really consumer perception and insurer perception. So in terms of consumers in Australia, most consumers seem to be aware of aggregators, particularly for health insurance, and I guess there's a lot of advertising around that which helps that awareness. Increasingly so for general insurance, for example, with the Compare the Market ads. In the UK, most customers are very much aware of aggregators, and there's a lot of heavy advertising by the aggregators in the UK. And when the aggregators started really building that market share, that was a key source. That was a key reason that the awareness did increase, because of the advertising blitz that they launched on the market, which the direct insurers weren't really able to compete against. In terms of insurer perception, I guess in Australia we're all aware that the two biggest players in the personal line space don't participate on the aggregator website for various reasons, one of which would be that they don't see an economic value arising from that. Whereas in the UK, what's happened is that most of the motor insurers and home insurers have come to realise that there is an economic value for them to participate on the aggregator websites, and primarily it's to do with the acquisition costs relating to aggregators versus if they go through their direct distribution channels.
So the second hypothesis that we had around markets to flourish is around the trend for consumers to be online and willing to purchase online. So we obtained some data from World Bank, which was around internet users as a percentage of the population, and that didn't shed a whole lot of light, I guess, onto the success or failure of aggregators, because the internet take-up rates were really quite similar. I guess the maturity profile was slightly different, I guess even with the UK lagging behind Australia initially, but then catching up and surpassing at a similar time to when their aggregated markets really took off and were successful. While you can see in those four major markets that we assessed, the current state is really to between 80 and 90% of the population are internet users. So obviously, while internet usage was fairly similar between the markets, the take-up rates of aggregators were quite different. So there appears to be some deeper cultural factors at play. The EY Consumer Survey, I'm not sure who was in this room previously, but our colleague Walter Putcher from EY presented on the EY Consumer Survey, and that touched on topics such as distribution channels for acquiring insurance products. And it shows that there has been an increase in online purchases over time, but the actual purchase levels did vary quite a lot between different countries. So going into a bit more detail around that and the data from the EY survey, the propensity for people to purchase insurance policies online appears to be quite mature in Australia, certainly against the global average. Also, while not shown separately, the maturity of the UK is definitely at a higher percentage of online consumers than what the global average is. And also that they're accustomed to purchasing products online. Within the survey, the willingness of the UK customer to buy online partly results from the fact that a sizable proportion of non-life business was already conducted over the telephone without advice. And we could certainly echo those comments for Australia. So it definitely appeared that in terms of the online trend, Australia definitely ticks those boxes in terms of willingness to engage and purchase insurance products online.
So given those stats, it was even more surprising, I guess, to us as to why aggregators aren't flourishing in Australia, and some of the other hypotheses may help explain that. So our third hypothesis, which we thought was necessary for aggregators to flourish, appears to be the commoditisation of the actual insurance product itself. So the UK experienced significant commoditisation of car insurance during the early noughties, and this was primarily due to significant costs incurred by insurers in terms of both advertising, marketing, and also the actual cost of providing the coverage. Because of those costs and because of the commoditisation, customers then therefore started to focus primarily on price as being the key differentiator across the product, and this therefore effectively meant an open invitation for aggregators to become involved and try and take their place. And so, if anything, the aggregators and their involvement has further led to the further commoditisation of the insurance product, because customers do really look at price as being a differentiator. The perception of customers also has an impact here, in that commoditisation is to customers' advantage, since it makes them easier to compare the product. So rather than having to look through various different parameters, they're really focusing just on price as being a differentiator. What we would say here is that in Australia, it certainly seems that neither home or car insurance is as commoditised as what we've observed in the UK. And this could be one reason to explain why aggregators haven't flourished in Australia yet. But in contrast, health insurance products, in our view, I guess, are largely commoditised in Australia, and that may help explain the increasing market share of iSelect. Also, the fact that health insurance is a quasi-compulsory product may mean that customers are largely focused on price, particularly those the young, healthy customers who really focus on buying the product that gives them the best, most, I guess, the most tax-effective outcome.
The fourth hypothesis is around the deterioration of insurers' brand loyalty. So brand loyalty, or the lack of it, definitely contributes significantly to the success of aggregators. It's apparent that Australia tends to exhibit a reasonably high level of brand loyalty with relatively or reasonably high levels of retention. The largest two personal insurance insurers possess between 75 and 80% of the market, and as Hardik alluded to before, the top two health insurers are around 60% or just over of the market. In the UK, there appears to be more competition in the market, with the largest insurer being approximately 30% prior to aggregators entering the market. This has marginally dropped since the introduction of aggregators, mainly because that insurer was unwilling to participate in that distribution channel. Additionally, in the UK, the level of retention was around 70% pre-aggregators and is now understood to be between 25 and 30%. So it's an extraordinary high level of turnover from one year to the next within motor insurance in the UK. 70% of new motor insurance policies are also sold through aggregators, and with home insurance it's around 45%. So that indicates there's a relatively low degree of insurer loyalty in the UK market. I guess you can argue whether that is because of aggregators or whether that was a precondition that was already in place before aggregators became involved. Additionally, in the Australian health market, 40 to 50% of new business is placed through iSelect, so that really shows that people are engaging with that website in order to try and find the cheapest price, which is an indicator that there is a lack of loyalty in that market. I think also with some of the demutualisations and the establishment of the for-profit funds within health insurance is potentially also contributing to some deterioration of insurer brand loyalty within the health insurance space. Additionally, the Ernst & Young consumer survey asked consumers about their attitude to their insurance company, and it was up to 62% of customers said that insurers made no effort to retain them. So that would seem to suggest that, you know, there is a lack of loyalty potentially emerging within within personal line space.
I think that 62 was the 20, 10 to 2012 survey. Now it's gone up to 89, so it's quite a significant increase in that statistic. So the final precondition that we believe has to exist for aggregators to flourish is that they actually have to make a contribution to the market, whether it's for customers and also for the insurers. So in terms of customers, the advantages of aggregators is that it appears to have led to a lot more price competition, certainly in the overseas market, and therefore ultimately that should in theory lead to better prices for customers. Theoretically, aggregators should also offer customers independent comparison of insurance products so that they're able to see what is available throughout the market rather than them being influenced by what a particular insurer obviously wants to advertise. But some of the disadvantages are that aggregators have recently, been accused of misleading customers in their advertisements. So a lot of customers do think that aggregators are independent and offer comparison across the entire market, and often that's because of misinformation on the part of the customer, but it's a perception that's held, and therefore if they don't read the fine print, then they're not aware of some of the limitations of the aggregators. The use of the middleman, in this case the aggregators, can lead to increased prices for customers. So in Australia for iSelect, the commission rate is quite high, and it's much higher than what we're aware of in the UK, which contributed to the success in the UK. And customers obviously don't get the direct advice from the insurers as you would if you were to buy directly from the insurer. For insurers, some of the advantages are that in the UK, certainly one of the attractiveness, one of the reasons for aggregators being successful is they offered a lower acquisition cost than what insurers had directly there. So back when aggregators started becoming successful, the acquisition cost through that channel was approximately £50 per policy, compared to a 10 to 15% commission rate that insurers had to pay through the brokers. It also obviously provides a new distribution channel for challenger brands, and ultimately it's the success. Aggregators will really only succeed if there are insurers and market participants who are looking to increase their market share. Because if everyone's happy with their established market share, then there's no real desire to seek new distribution channels for additional market share. There are a few disadvantages. The increase in commoditisation that aggregators may drive could lead to too much focus on price, which is certainly one of the points that a lot of the insurers have raised in their second round of submissions to the FSI. There's an erosion of the insurer's market share, obviously, and that's an obvious statement. And finally, it can increase price competition, exacerbating the pricing cycle. So as some of you may be aware, in the late 2000s, the loss ratios in the UK motor market were exorbitantly high, and that correlated with the rise of aggregators. So there's no real causation, but what our discussions with our colleagues did indicate is that there were systemic issues causing the high loss ratios, and because of the price competition driven by the aggregators, insurers weren't able to react to that through the normal pricing cycle process. So, having looked at those five preconditions, what we've pulled together here is a quick summary of what exists within the, three markets that we've decided to focus on eventually, which is the general insurance market for Australia, health insurance, and the UK. So for the Australian general insurance market, the two big barriers for aggregators to succeed are the level of brand loyalty, which was illustrated by the low churn rates and the high insurer rates, so about the 80 to 90% customer rates of retention. And this is particularly high when compared to the UK and health insurance. And the second big reason is the fact that for insurers, or at least the established major players who've got their market shares, there's no real incentive to participate and take part with aggregators because there's no cost-benefit advantage to them.
I guess one outlet that we're seeing of that, as well as the investment that the big insurers have in the direct advertising and trying to preserve the value of their brand, so they're really kind of resisting that deterioration of the brand. So that's essentially one of the ways that they're looking to combat, I guess, that pull to engage with the aggregator channel.
So in terms of Australian health insurance, most people, would say that aggregators are well-established in the market, and that's arisen because they meet most of the sort of preconditions that we've identified. Brand loyalty has particularly deteriorated in recent periods because of the demutualisations, the consolidations, and the move to for-profit funds. And in the UK, basically in summary, all those conditions are being met. Although we do note that there has been a bit of negative press regarding aggregators, and that may contribute to that trust element starting to reduce, and therefore some preference away from aggregators. But there's no view that that's going to happen dramatically or immediately.
We've got a few question marks up there as well. I guess the question mark, particularly around the health space and the contribution to the market. I think it's seen as a more expensive distribution channel, but yet it seems to be attractive enough for a wide range of health insurers to actually be engaging with that channel. So we think that there's probably some benefit to part of the market on the insurer side, and I think definitely on the consumer side with the level of engagement, definitely. Would be a tick for the consumer, but I think there's still some work to go in terms of the insurer side of the equation.
So I'm sure this is why everyone's here, for this question that we posed in our synopsis, and as all good presentations, we'll give a varied response without any definite conclusions. So is this the last time we need to talk about aggregators? I guess it, more specifically, it's to do with personal lines rather than the whole general insurance industry. And what's our answer, Josh? I can't remember. No. So the way we've looked to answer this is to look at, against those five preconditions, what's the likely, I guess, direction in those conditions. The main things we've identified is that for general insurance, it's the brand loyalty aspect that we believe there could be some deterioration of. And that's primarily due to the increasing role that the challenger brands are playing in the market. So they've been very aggressive in marketing themselves as something different and providing a more tailored product to consumers. And as part of that, and as also part of their thirst for market share, that would be one reason why aggregators may play a role in the future if that's a distribution channel the challengers choose to pursue.
I guess the other unknown, the question mark's really around the contribution to the market. I guess to the extent that the aggregators can morph their business models to try and make it a bit more attractive to get some of the insurers to engage. And I think it's really going to be the combination between the deterioration of the brand and the contribution to market, and whether it reaches a tipping point where some of the larger players really are going to have to seriously consider whether they would engage with aggregators, I guess, in the face of declining market share, for example.
And I would say that, and Josh alluded to this earlier, the increased level of advertising from the direct insurers would certainly indicate, and I guess we don't have their opinion here directly, would indicate that they are concerned about market share, and therefore it's that fight for market share which may provide the catalyst for aggregators to really become a stronger player in the general insurance market. Thank you.
Okay, so we're being recorded, so questions will need to come from the centre, please, or if you don't want to stand, you can call me over with the microphone, but go to the centre. I'll start with the obligatory softball question. It's in two parts. First is for, I guess, my benefit, a bit of history. What came first? Was it the commoditisation in the UK which led to the success of the aggregators, or because of the presence of the aggregators and insurers wanting to get on board, did they commoditise, so in terms of cause? And I guess the second part of the question is, you mentioned the acquisition costs in the UK being one of the seductive points. Do you feel that if the insurers were to get a do-over, they would do it again, or might they take the Australian tact?
For your first question, I think it was a bit of a self-enforcing cycle. So I think there was definitely, if not commoditisation of the product initially, there was definitely the consumer perception that there was. And so when engaging with the aggregator, there was definitely the perception that the products were generally like for like. And it was really only in the more rare event of actually going to make a claim that I guess the differences in the coverage would really come out. So I think there was really that period, where there was that self-perpetuating enforcement of the perception of commoditisation. I think in response to that, the insurers probably then decided if the decision is going to be predominantly made on price, then therefore maybe we do simplify our product, maybe we do commoditise our product more in line with some of the cheaper prices that are available through the aggregators. How do you have anything to add?
I concur with everything Josh said.
I guess in terms of whether the insurers in the UK would go ahead and do it all again, that was an interesting part of the conversation we had with our colleagues, and definitely it's seen as though they've kind of moved through that phase where they had the deterioration in loss ratios. I think it's just really forced them to be a lot more granular in their technical pricing and making sure that they're not getting picked off through those aggregated channels. But now they've kind of come back, you know, to more of a level playing field in terms of that capability, they're kind of seeing that it's still going to be, you know, very much a feature of the market going forward. They've really adapted to that.
Yeah, and I think how they responded really was influenced by the other going-ons in the market. So the fact that it coincided with the high level of underlying loss ratios because there's a lot of fraud happening and various other causes. So in the future, or in the past, if that hadn't happened, their reaction may have been different. The other point is probably the market share is not as heavily concentrated amongst two insurers as we've got in Australia right now, and that influenced, I guess, how they approached it because they were still fighting for market share, whereas right now we've got fairly established market shares. And so one conversation we did have internally was if this was happening prior to the consolidation that we've had in the GI industry in Australia, whether the aggregators may have had more of a chance prior to Suncorp and IAG becoming so dominant in terms of personal lines business.
Tim Andrews, Infinity. Look, I totally get why the insurers wouldn't want to join the aggregators. And so they've been running this story that it puts too much focus on the price and not enough on other aspects like the product, for example. And they've got their own survey out, the 2013 survey about underinsurance for home insurance, and 45% of customers weren't sure if they were covered for earthquake. It kind of makes me wonder, well, people don't really know that much about their product, and my question is the line they're running that this is about putting too much focus on price and not the right focus on product, the right line to be run?
So as consultants wanting to maintain our revenue base, I'll try and tread carefully on that one. Look, I guess in public it's a line that appears to have resonated with the market, so not many customers have gone through the aggregators. They've still got their market share through their direct channels. Underlying, I think one of the main reasons is really why they're not participating is because they've got the established market share, and what the big players can only see is a loss of market share through that channel. So commercially, the decision not to participate makes absolute sense on that level because people then start to focus very much on the price rather than what the relationships are with the customers. The other thing we would note is whilst you've got IAG and Suncorp, and obviously that followed the consolidation of various brands, there appears to be a lot of strong brand loyalty to that local NRMA or RACQ. The local brand certainly seems to carry quite a lot of weight, and it's not as strong as it, and in the UK it wasn't that strong, is our understanding. So the fact that NRMA has been providing services to New South Wales for so long means there is that certain level of brand loyalty which is really not going to be superseded by price because people trust that brand and will continue to use it.
I guess the other dimension to that as well is to the extent that the insurer really has to make a case for them not to engage with the aggregator. You would think that, you know, in the private functioning market, if they're choosing not to engage, then that's probably sufficient. I guess to the extent that they're looking to try and explain that, I guess in more palatable terms, I guess is a function, I guess, around the connection that they're trying to continue to build with their customers as much as anything.
Hi there, Ned Scanger at Willis Reed. I've just got a question about aggregators' ability to shake up the market. Has there been any evidence that you've seen overseas, or do you think it's possible here, that aggregators could expose price cost subsidies between products? Because that might be one of the rationales for between major insurers here.
Yeah, so I think that was definitely the case just in the direct experience after the UK aggregators. So I think it was, the combination, of aggregators coming along at the same time as you had deteriorating experience in the motor loss ratios in the UK. And I think that was exacerbated to a certain extent by the fact that, you know, you were getting picked off, when you were the lowest premium within the market. So I think that was definitely exposing some of the flaws within some of the rating models, for example. But I think, given that experience, I think a lot of the insurers that are, in order to restore their profitability have really focused in, on understanding the technical cost of the risk a lot more.
Yeah, just really that last point, having learnt that, they've really focused on trying to understand if there is any sort of arbitrage in their sort of what they're offering versus the market, and hoping not to be blindsided as they may have been during the late 2000s.
Francois Rademeyer, QBE. In the markets where the aggregators didn't really take off, I think you mentioned Germany, were any of the big players on board in that? If none of them got on board and the aggregators didn't get enough critical mass, then that may explain why they didn't take off?
Yeah, it's a very good question. In our discussions with our colleagues, particularly around the German market, they said that everyone just stands back and waits for Allianz to make their decision. Allianz did eventually decide that they would go on one of those aggregators. However, everyone piled in after that. It was just seen as being another distribution channel over there, but the consumer just resisted engaging with that particular distribution channel.
Yeah, so there's a strong cultural element to that, in that consumers, we're used to having that direct relationship with who they're buying services from, and that was part of the insurance purchase as well, and so aggregators didn't really provide that necessary condition, and therefore, whilst there was an available channel to buy insurance, no one really took it up because they continued to go through the direct channels with the insurers.
So if there aren't any further questions, the lunch line is building by the minute. So if you'd like to thank Hardig and Josh, please.